Parrish again from CBSSports.com. Again, it's now Wednesday, October 29th, which means we're just a little more than 2 weeks from the start of the college basketball season. And this is, of course, the Eye on College Basketball podcast, which is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. As usual, Matt Norlander, my colleague, CBSSports.com, joins me. Hi, Matt Norlander. How are you today?
Hi, Gary Parrish. I'm doing well. I know you're down there in Charlotte for ACC Media Day. I'm about ready for the season to start, but we still got 16 days to go. And it's pretty interesting. We're going to get into, you know, what you saw, what you heard about down there. But in addition to our top 100 list, I'm ready. It was an interesting day in following what you saw down there from afar here up on Twitter where I was sitting. There were some interesting quotes from not just Boeheim and Roy, but, you know, also Krzyzewski got asked about it. And, you know, the language of the tweet I read from whoever sent it out, I apologize for not remembering, was basically – Krzyzewski cutting off whoever asked him was like, I'm not going to talk about that whatsoever regarding Roy and North Carolina. No surprise there. And it's funny, you know, a couple of years ago, Krzyzewski was under brief fire for
Lance Williams, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Lance Thomas.
Lance Thomas. Where did I get Williams from?
But that's like totally been forgotten about.
Oh, sure.
Rick Pitino is in the afterglow of winning a title, and the Italian restaurant escapades are now far in the distance. And then, of course, the two other legends there. Boeheim's kind of been embattled over the past few years with a number of things, and now Roy has the heaviest spotlight. So I don't know. What was your primary takeaway from the day? Did you get a chance to sit with Roy specifically or Boeheim in the groups and ask them anything? And what was the overall tenor of what I presume was a fairly crowded ACC media day?
Yeah, I do think there were a lot of, you know, I don't know who all was planning on coming, from the beginning, like regardless of the circumstances, but I know I wasn't. And I talked to Pat Forty, our buddy from Yahoo Sports. I know he wasn't. And I don't really go to media days anymore. I don't find them useful for me. I think they're great for beat writers and they're great for certain people, I guess. But I don't find them useful for the way I do my job. And so I just sort of have stopped going because I don't get much benefit of sitting in a crowd with a bunch of other reporters. And so I mostly just respectfully decline the invitations every year from various conferences. But at the last minute, I decided I probably needed to be here because, as you know, the two biggest stories in college basketball, unfortunately, are both rooted in this league. One being the North Carolina academic scandal and the other being the Syracuse NCAA investigation that will reach a new point later on this week. I guess it's Thursday and Friday. They will meet with the Committee on Infractions. So once you know that Boeheim's going to be here and Roy's going to be here and they're going to be here under these circumstances, then I decided at the last minute to go. I know Pat Forty did as well. And yes, it made for a crowded situation. It was interesting because though their situations are obviously different, one's an academic scandal and one seems to be a wide-ranging NCAA investigation / scandal. Roy and Jim are in similar situations in that they're both Hall of Famers whose programs are under fire, whether it's their fault or not. North Carolina's reputation has taken a hit. Roy's reputation has taken a hit. Jim Boeheim's, I guess we don't really know the details of what the NCAA is alleging. But, you know, whenever you have to have the moment he's going to have later on this week, and the details will eventually come out, there's going to be some stuff there that is problematic by definition. Otherwise, this stuff wouldn't exist. And so it was interesting for me to see how they would handle it. And I felt like I wanted to be here for that. What I found fascinating is that they could not have handled it differently. You know, Roy Williams is, I think, tired of talking about this. But
no, there's no doubt about it. He was tired of talking about it. I remember last year before the, you know, the Weinstein report came out. So,
yeah
no doubt.
But, you know, I'm not going to defend Roy because I think he's taken some missteps here. You know, dating back to, you know, when half his team or more was in what we now know was a bogus major. But I think at his core, he's a decent guy. And my point being, he's not ever too interested in trying to belittle somebody and trying to be dismissive of somebody and trying to be defiant just to be defiant. He typically, he gets frustrated, he gets agitated, he gets passionate, he gets teary-eyed, but he'll talk. Like, if you ask him the question, he'll talk. Now, he might express frustration, but then he'll talk. And so his nature is to, at least I've never seen him be this way with me personally or people in groups. He finds it, I don't think it's in his blood to be rude, you know, whereas Jim's perfectly comfortable being rude. He doesn't care. And so Roy sat there and talked, you know, for an hour today over and over again about, you know, the situation and what he could and could have done differently and could not have done differently, what he knew, what he didn't know, his frustrations, his fears. He was really good, really passionate. Jim, on the other hand, was just dismissive. Like, I'm not talking about it. You know, like, you know, he sat down and, you know, there were a handful of us there. Pat Forty was there. Dane O'Neill was there. I was there. Some people who cover Syracuse, some people, you know, just who cover the ACC in general. And he basically sat down and said, I'm not talking about the NCAA, and, you know, at all. And looked at, like, a, you know, somebody had an iPad recording down there, and so it was a clock running. You could see it like a stopwatch. Mm-hmm. And he said, he basically, I think, mumbled like it'll be 15 seconds, like he was joking around. And Pat Forty asked a question, and he said, oh, it didn't even take 15 seconds. I'm not talking about that. And so then Dana tried something, tried to ask a similar question, and he just sat there quiet, like didn't say a word. And then, you know,
so awkward.
It is awkward, right? And then I felt obligated to, like, speak up. And so I, you know, I'm not going to be the one schmuck who won't, like, you know, have the balls to step up and say something. So I said, let me try this a different way. And he interrupted me and said, so is it just another way to ask the same question? I said, perhaps, but I'm going to try to get real creative. And he said, even though you are creative, I'm just not going to talk about it. And so then I said something about, you know, listen, Roy's on the other side of the room, and he's dealing with this as well. Like, you know, and before I could even get any further, he was like, good try, but I'm not talking about it. And then it just becomes like, all right, well, like, I don't care, like, about Daywon Coleman. You know, I'm not here to talk to you about, you know, like, so, like, what are we even doing here? And so he was completely just dismissive and defiant, which, whatever, he can be that way. Whereas Roy at least said substance. I'm curious, what do you think? What's the best way to handle it? I think you got to step up and talk about it. Otherwise, A, you just look like a jerk, and B, the questions never go away.
Behaim just doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Like a jerk.
Honestly, the only one that could ever supersede him in that regard, I think, is Bobby Knight in terms of college basketball coaches. Just does not care if he looks like a jerk. I mean, they're in slightly different positions in that, like, well, what's Roy going to do? The Wonstein report came out. Like, everything is out there. So the NCAA is going through an investigation, but the details are out there. It's just who he is. He's got that aw shucks about him. Boeheim is at least protected is not even the right word, but the details of what might be involved here regarding his program are still – they're shrouded.
Sure.
So
and you know what? And like he made up, he said, listen, we're not, they instruct us not to talk about this stuff. And so I guess where the only issue I would
have,
can talk about what it's like to deal with this stuff. You can
exactly.
talk about your friend. You can talk about it without talking about it, you know? And so I don't buy, that's his excuse, but I don't accept that as an excuse because,
listen,
because I wasn't sitting there, or Pat wasn't, or Dana wasn't, or any of us. We weren't sitting there going, so tell us exactly what went down with Fab Mello. You know, my question, which, you know, he had no interest in even hearing, was basically, you know, like, this should be, you know, you're a Hall of Famer, and you're, you know, coming off a year in which you had a number one ranked team, and now you've got another team that, you know, should finish in the top five or six in the ACC and could support. And yet nobody wants to talk to you about basketball. Everybody wants to talk to you about this just the same way everybody wants to talk to Roy about that. And I imagine it must be frustrating on some level. Or, are you concerned that this is going to be part of your legacy? What if this is a really, really bad scandal that the NCAA has uncovered? You know, like, let's talk about that type of stuff. I don't need to know the details. Let's talk about what you're going through right now. And whereas Roy would talk about that, Jim just was completely dismissive of it. And it's, again, I don't mean to suggest that he was any different than he is any other time. I mean,
he
acted this way with a smile. And then we sat there and did talk about basketball for 20 minutes. He was fine. But I don't know. I just don't buy the whole, oh, we can't talk about it, because nobody's asking you about Fab Melo. We're just asking you about, like, yo, man, how do you navigate this? And, you know, at your age, with your credentials, now this is, depending on what comes out, this is going to be part of your legacy, and it could tarnish you in a very real way. What's that like? And he wouldn't even engage.
Well, here's what's striking to me is that, you know, I saw someone pass along a quote from Roy where he basically was like, oh gosh, I hope this isn't a big part of how they remember me. And it was like, Roy, it actually is going to be a huge part of how you're remembered. Like, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to view that, depending on where you sit as a college basketball fan, yeah, this is going to be a big part. Maybe not the biggest part, but it's certainly at this point in time, as we're in the middle of it, it seems very huge. Whereas Boeheim, it's very much could be the same kind of situation. I mean, this unrelated but still a huge story with the Bernie Fine stuff, who, by the way, a judge recently said that the former ball boy were essentially slandered by Boeheim and that they can go after him and have a lawsuit. He doesn't seem to give a damn about that. And that's fine. I mean, Boeheim's a great coach, but there's a certain way you could handle yourself and certainly help yourself with the press and the media. Boeheim, you know, it kind of speaks to where he thinks he is professionally, just doesn't give a crap about what the media thinks, what the NCAA is. I mean, and that could come from a little bit of fear or just complete and utter confidence that he thinks he'll get out of whatever his program is potentially facing with Fab Melo, impermissible benefits to maybe some other players that we don't even know about instances. So I'm not surprised he was like that with you. Would have been refreshing if he wasn't like that, to be honest. But, you know, he is facing, you know, he's getting on a plane. He probably is on a plane now, heading toward Indianapolis as we record this podcast. And Thursday and ideally Friday, he'll sit and talk with the Committee on Fractions. So it is a relatively big moment in his coaching career, because what he shares is obviously extremely vital. He needs to be upfront and honest, because if he's not, we've seen the damage that can happen there.
I will say, I didn't get the sense, and I don't get the sense that he is, because there are sometimes you'll talk to coaches and they'll say, hey, we didn't do anything wrong. So, like, we're going to go through this, but you will be vindicated at the end of it. There's none of that. Basically, he said, you know, to the extent that he would talk about anything, Jim Boeheim said, you know, we're going to go through this and they'll have their side of the story and we'll have our side of the story. And then, you know, and then they'll do what they're going to do and then we'll move on. You know, like he was. So it's not like we haven't done anything. We run our program the right way. You know, this is all crazy and you'll see. It's always it was more like, yeah, whatever they do, they'll do, and then we'll move on and whatever. Like, it was just sort of like I don't care. Whereas, whether or not he really cares or not, I don't know. But he certainly portrays an image of I don't care. Yeah. Roy cares. Roy cares deeply, and I know that he can say he hopes that this isn't a part of his story. But like you said, it is undeniably going to be a part of his story. It is already a part of his story. And he had those Roy Williams moments today where he got really, really passionate. Like, you know, this is my school. Like, this is where, so when people, you know, talk about the integrity of my school, like that hurts me, you know, because this isn't a place where, you know, I took the job because it was the best job I could get. And I'm going to leave in 3 years or, you know, I'm not a job bouncer. You know, this is where this is my destiny. This is my home. This is my school. This is, my kids went to school here. And so, you know, he acknowledged, yes, all of this bothers me. It is tearing me up. And yes, we've made mistakes. And there are people in our university that have made mistakes. And it's sad. And like, he genuinely does care, I think, about the reputation of North Carolina. He genuinely does care about how this might tarnish him, how it already has tarnished him, even if he's still in denial to some degree. What I found interesting was that he will acknowledge that maybe he should have known more. He will acknowledge that maybe he should have done more in hindsight. But any question of his ethics, he fights back pretty strongly in an impressive way, frankly. He may just be acting up there, but if you were trying to get him to acknowledge that he knew what was going on, or that he knew these classes didn't really exist, or that he knew it was a bogus major, he'll stop you right there. He won't give any on that. He'll give some everywhere else. Should I have known? Should I have paid closer attention? Should I have asked more questions? Maybe, maybe, maybe. But do not, and this was him talking, do not question my ethics. Do not tell me, call me dumb, call me naive, call me foolish, but don't tell me that I, A, don't care about academics, and B, knew that this stuff was going on within my program or within our university. Like, there's no proof of that. Nobody will ever be able to prove that, and nobody will ever get me to acknowledge that. I didn't know what was going on. I might have been naive, but I was not participating in the stuff that was going on, and it was not happening. I didn't have knowledge of it when it was happening. He is pretty defiant and passionately so when it comes to that conversation.
Which means he's either telling the truth or he has, belief beyond a doubt that even if that's not true, it could never be proven.
You know what, so I think? I think he is telling the truth. But here's the deal. I also think if you didn't know, it's because you didn't want to know.
Yeah, of course. And we talked about this last week. Yeah, I mean, there was certainly an element to that. And a lot of this, when it was happening, it was something of a different climate. But
I think he didn't want to know. And, I talked to somebody connected to the program today because, they'd read my column from last week where I basically said, Roy Williams is the latest to cover his eyes and cover his ears and just coach his basketball team. I don't think there's anything unique about that in the history of college basketball coaching. But I do believe that's what Roy did here. And so, as the story goes from the North Carolina side, what they will tell you is that Roy thought it looks as weird having all these kids in the same major. And then, he went and asked his academic person, like, hey, we're not steering them to this major, are we? And they said, no. And then he still sort of wanted them to not be a part of that major. But that took 2 years later before they were mostly removed from the major. And so the argument is, hey, Roy Williams is the only person at North Carolina who actually tried to break this thing up. And I just respectfully disagree. I don't think that that's proof that he tried to break anything up, because the argument goes, because the counter to that is, yo, man, you still had people in that major. Like, you can say that you realized it was might have been shady after the 2005 season. But then you still had people in that major up until, I think,
2009.
Yeah, okay. So and so then the counter argument to that, I had this conversation earlier today, and I've had it with North Carolina fans as well, is, and Roy's actually said this too, well, I can't tell people what classes not to take. That's the argument. Hey, Roy Williams can at the end of the day, Roy Williams cannot tell his players what to major in and what not to major in. And that's crazy. Like, that's bullshit. Yes, you can. Like, if you – coaches tell their players what to do all the time. So, let's say there's this shady character around the program who's a runner for an agent, and he's involved in guns and drugs and hookers and whatever. If the coach is aware, you don't think there's a coach in the country who will gather his players around and say, hey, don't go anywhere close to that guy. I don't want you anywhere close to that guy. If I hear you around that guy, it's a problem. If there's a bar – where bad stuff's going on right off campus, coaches all the time will say, hey, listen, I want you guys to be college students. I want you to enjoy yourself. But that place is off limits. Coaches put in curfews for adults if they're college basketball players sometimes. There was when John Calipari was the coach at Memphis, he actually had a rule at one point where the players weren't allowed to be in clubs. And if they were, he wanted normal people to take iPhone pictures of them and send them to him. And so basically it was your ban from going to clubs. So my point is this: coaches tell players what to do all the time. If you really thought that a major was bogus and you really thought that it was wrong for your players to be in it, absolutely you could tell them not to major there. And so that's the only place where I just fundamentally disagree, is that, a basketball coach is a basketball coach, and he can't tell players what the major in. Yes, he can. That's not true. Now, so then it leads to, what did Roy know, what he didn't know? I genuinely believe he probably didn't know that these were paper classes. Otherwise, I don't think he would be as adamant about that as he is right now. But I think it benefited him not to know, and so he went out of his way not to know. And I will tell you this, and I'll put that – I'm working on a column as well, and I'll think I'll include this in the column. There's 15 ACC basketball coaches now. Is that the right number? There's something like that.
14, I think. 14. Maybe 15. Okay. It's tough to keep track.
Okay, whatever the number is. Well, you know, some of those guys I know really well just from doing this job, and well enough to where I can talk to them honestly.
You and Brad Brownell are boys, man.
I do like Brad. I've known Brad for a while. But I guess my point is this. I went out of my way to pull some ACC coaches aside today. Not people who hate Roy. I wasn't fishing for anything other than the answer to this question. If you had more than half of your roster in a bogus major and their grades contradicted what it is, you know, their high school transcripts suggested they ought to be as students, is there any scenario under which you wouldn't know? Is there any scenario under which you wouldn't know? I asked this to, I believe, 4 or 5 different ACC coaches, privately and off the record, with anonymity granted. And every one of them said, there's no way you don't know. There's no way. Okay. Like, listen, I mean, I haven't had one guy say, listen, I like Roy, you know, he got caught up in this, but like the idea that he didn't know is just like, come on, man, you do know. Because, you know, as the coaches explained, you are constantly in contact with your academic people and you're constantly like, you know, hey, so-and-so needs a B. Like, is he going to get a B? Like, you are so, when you coach at this level, you are so in tune about what's going on academically that if your academic advisors know that these are sham classes and your players know these are sham classes, you either do know and don't care, or you don't know because you are going way out of your way not to know. There is no in between. So where Roy will just sort of write it off, he is writing it off and say, listen, I was just naive, I guess. I will tell you this, matter-of-factly, his colleagues don't buy that at all. What his colleagues believe that if he didn't know, it's not because the only reason he wouldn't know is because he went really out of his way to not know. They reject any other scenario. Either he's lying, which I don't believe. I don't think he's lying. Or he went way out of his way not to know and created enough of a buffer between him and all that to where if it ever came to this, he could be able to say what he's saying now. But the idea that your players could be more than half your roster in this major that is a complete sham and you not be aware that it's a complete sham, again, every single coach I spoke with said that's just not real life.
It's not real life.
And you know what? I had one coach today. I thought this was interesting because somebody might have brought this up over the past week or written about it. I don't know. But this one coach said, think about Bruce Weber. He said, Bruce Weber might never have a chance to win a national championship again. And he lost it to a bunch of kids, or at least some kids who probably shouldn't have been in school. All right? Yeah. Like that's, you don't get that back if you're Bruce Weber. Like that. So this isn't like a... this is wide ranging who it actually affected. And then another coach brought this up to me. He said, okay, if you've got more than half of a roster of a basketball team, not taking real classes essentially, and you're recruiting one and done players, which is what North Carolina does, you're recruiting future pros. You don't think that becomes a recruiting tool? In other words, this coach said, you don't think there are recruits coming on campus for official visits and they're going out to dinner with the players and they're going to parties with the players and they're, hooking up with girls with the players and all the stuff that happens on recruiting visits. He said, you don't think at some point a Rashad McCants or a Sean May or a Raymond Felton or somebody else involved in that program at that time looks at some future pro, some top 10 pick and says, listen, man, here's the great thing about coming here is that we don't even have to go to school. Like, we don't have to do anything. Like we just play, we just ball out. And, like, we get grades. We don't even know why, but we get them. So, like, you're only going to be in school a year or two anyway, and then you're going to be in the NBA. So, like, listen, man, you come to Carolina. You're playing here underneath these banners. You're on national television all the time. You're Jordan Brand. And you don't have to do the stupid work that you're going to have to do if you go to school A, B, or C. So this is the best setup going. Like, this coach said, is it really a stretch to think that that conversation happened somewhere? Probably not, is it? Is it possible that North Carolina benefited in recruiting because they were recruiting to a scenario that might seem attractive and advantageous to a 17-year-old future NBA player? Maybe. I think so.
That's absolutely feasible on every sort of level when you really consider what these players probably talk about. You know, on the real, so to speak, sure, during these recruiting trips. And if that is truly a situation where, you know, Carolina basketball players. Granted, it wasn't every class. We know what it was, but it was their major for plenty of players. If that's the situation that they're in, you know, a lot of, you know, breaking news, plenty of kids who play college basketball don't like going to school and hate class. And
well, how about this?
That goes for plenty of players that don't.
If you took me at 17 years old and said, yo, man, you can get a degree from this school and you won't really have, you know, yeah, you got to pass, say, you know, 15 hours a semester, but nine of them are going to be bogus classes. You don't even have to worry about it. Like, that would have been attractive to me. And I'm not a basketball player. I was just somebody who, you know, at a certain point in my life, like, it was sort of like, I liked the idea of an easy way out, you know, like, like a lot of 17-year-olds might, you know, I went back as an adult and read most of the books that I was supposed to read in high school. You know, like, but my point being, when I was 16, 17 years old, I had no interest in that stuff. So, like, well, I don't want to speak for all 16, 17 year olds in America, but I imagine a good percentage and a really good percentage of basketball prospects would be attracted to the idea that you can go to an ACC school and maybe not have to really go to school. And so I don't doubt that. Certainly not a recruiting tool Roy Williams used, but again, players talk. Like, I was with Jahlil Okafor a few weeks ago, and he said one of the person he talked to all the time while Duke was recruiting him wasn't just Mike Krzyzewski or you know, any Duke assistant.
Jabari
Parker. He was like, he said, you know, Jahlil told me, you know, Coach K would tell me something over the phone. Then I'd pick up the phone and call Jabari. And I'd be like, yo, is this true? Is this really the way it is? Like, is Coach telling the truth? And so my point being, players talk to recruits all the time. And they, as you put it, talk to them, you know, in real talk. And I don't doubt that that there's at least a scenario where a recruit might have picked North Carolina based on the idea and on some level that the actual school part of being a student athlete wouldn't be too difficult. Like, I don't think that's a stretch. You mentioned earlier that the NCAA has reopened this investigation. That's very much true. You're a betting man. Would you think the 2005 national title is vacated?
Oh boy. I was talking with one of our colleagues who just works at the site. I won't name him, but we were discussing this on GChat yesterday. He says yes.
I say yes too.
Going to happen. I said 50-50. I'll say no. So I'll repeat myself and say no. But he really thinks it's going to happen. You think it's? I mean, what percentage would you place on it right now? I'm not going to be shocked if it happened. That would be, you know, vacating wins, whatever we can talk about. When you actually take away a banner and it has to come down, and you remove a championship, you can argue whether that punishment, so to speak, is silly or not. It does have impact and will have reverberations if and when it happens.
I think it's a real punishment, particularly for a school like North Carolina. You know, those banners, I mean, that is a prominent part of the Dean Smith Center. Have you been there? Have you ever been there, Dean Smith Center?
I've been outside of the Dean Smith Center.
You should have gone in.
It was the off season. The doors are locked. Trust me, I tried every nook and cranny.
Yeah, but like when you walk in, that is the striking image.
Yes, I actually looked through the doors and you can see, yes, it is.
I mean, those banners, the Jordan banner, the championship banners, that's the striking image of the Dean Smith Center. And so for one of those banners to not be there, I don't know that it would matter to everybody everywhere, but it would matter to that school. I don't know about percentages. I think better than 50, though. I think it's more likely than not. And you know, really, like, typically there's an argument, you know, about this type of stuff, but you know, about what did or did not happen, you know. So the issue here is that North Carolina has basically already acknowledged that this happened. And so it seems to me that the NCAA is only going to have to go back, look at transcripts and figure out that whether it was Rashawn McCants or Sean May or any one player, if they can show that one player was only eligible because of the sham classes, then that should lead them to a place where they can retroactively make that player ineligible and then vacate every single moment that player participated in that particular year, which would include the national championship game. And so, you know, that's essentially what happened to Memphis 2008 Final Four. I mean, Derrick Rose was ruled retroactively ineligible, and therefore Memphis had to forfeit whatever it is he participated in. And so I really don't see how the NCAA could hold Memphis to a strict liability clause as it pertains to Derrick Rose without also holding North Carolina to a strict liability clause as it pertains to that 2005 team, unless, of course, they just don't, because they sometimes they just don't, you know, like I don't, you know, sometimes they just don't. I, you know, there's no real consistency with the NCAA, but
right.
But certainly, it's if they want to do it, it seems like they've got all the ammunition they need. It's just going to take, it's just going to take finding the one player who would have been ineligible without these classes, and you know, best I can tell, that's not going to be hard to find.
Mm-hmm. What else do you want to chat about, GP?
Well, the top 100 list.
Top 100, that's right, sir.
Is going to be published at CBSSports.com at some point in the next 24 hours, I believe.
Yeah, Thursday morning is when it's when it's going up.
I sort of mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the ACC in general, but the top is three ACC players, Okafor, Harrell, and Marcus Page. We could go through it. I mean,
we don't have to go one through 100 here, but like, I just wanted to kind of just generally chat about the list.
Here is where we, I think, have a philosophical difference.
We definitely do, and it's cool.
Here is my issue. In what scenario is somebody who plays at UC Santa Barbara...
So, Alan Williams.
...who is a borderline NBA prospect at best, legitimately one of the best 40 college basketball players in the country. I tend to subscribe to this. The 10th guy on Kentucky's bench or the 8th on Kansas's is a better college basketball player than somebody who's putting up big numbers in, say, the Sun Belt. That they don't have the stats to show it because they don't play in the Sun Belt. And so in my head, if you're ranking actual college basketball players, like, let's rank the best players. Like, if we held a tryout, who would be picked? And I just refuse to believe that some of the guys we end up listening because of you and our new colleague Sam Vecini aren't really ranked properly because they're not better than some of the dudes ranked below them. Like, do you really think put Alan Williams and Trey Lyles on a table and tell a coach they could take one of them? How many have taken Alan Williams over Trey Lyles?
Hey, Trey Lyles might end up being the better player by year's end. There's no doubt about it. I would say Alan Williams is better than a borderline pick at best. This is a guy who is what was third, fourth in the nation in scoring. When you're at that level and you're getting the attention of NBA scouts, I think it kind of proves that you've gone beyond simply the conference that you're playing in. And if you're like, he's on Jonathan Givony's draft board right now. For Draft Express. Guy knows what he's talking about.
At the very end, though. Like, come on.
But he's in. Dude, he's in. That's the point. Is there are 60 players he thinks will be drafted next year.
Right.
10 to 12 of those are international, so you shrink that down. He's saying right now, from a pro potential standpoint, that Alan Williams is really one of the 45 to 48 best players in college basketball. I think that's accurate and fair. I get where you're coming from, but I also think that you sometimes don't give enough credit to, yeah, just because a guy might end up in the Sun Belt or whatever conference you want to name, yeah, you know what, when he was 17, he might not have been at that level, but players are allowed to get better. They're allowed to be awesome. There are recruiting misses, so there are certainly some cases where you know, who do we think are the best college basketball players who are producing, it's not just talent. It's kind of talent and production. And the way that I've always kind of made my list and picked it out is basically if you're giving me a theoretical playground and I have every single college basketball player available to me and we're picking shirts and skins, I'm basically listing it off of guys that I would take in order. You're going to take him. Okay. I'll take him second. You take him. I'll take him third, fourth, fifth, whatever. Totally get it. We definitely have a difference in philosophy, but I do want to say that Vecini is if you thought it was bad with me.
Oh, I God, mean, the two of you. Like, I wanted to blow my brains out. You guys. And first off, I'm not holding somebody down based on their league. Like, you want to throw Steph Curry at the top of a list? I'm down with throwing Steph Curry at the top of the list. But, like, and again, let me be very clear. Let me back up for a second. Alan Williams is a fine college basketball player.
He's, like, really – he's not fine. He's extremely good. Like, arguably a top five rebounder and a top five proven scorer. So, like, he's very good. In my opinion, you put him on I don't know. You put him on
– Put him on Kentucky. Where does he play?
Well, Kentucky's an abnormal. Kentucky is the. I'll tell you what. You put him in. Put him in the Big East right now, and he would be a first league all team player without a question.
No.
You put him in the
Big East.
You're
missing the point. Any of these guys could play in any league. Okay, that's not the problem. The problem is if you take Alan Williams and you put him on Kentucky's roster, who's he playing in front of?
I mean, he's a smaller big compared to what they're doing. But yes, I understand what you're saying with Kentucky.
Okay,
there's
Kansas,
no doubt about it. And Kentucky.
Okay,
and just
Kansas.
A quick thing here.
Let's play Kansas. Who's he playing? Okay, so is he playing? Is he in Kansas's starting lineup?
I would start right now. No, I would put Alexander ahead of him, who we have. I would have Perry Ellis ahead of him, who we have.
Okay, so this is my point.
Those guys are already ranked ahead of him.
Perry Ellis is ranked at 22. Fine. Okay, like we can keep going. Like, what about Arizona? Would he start at Arizona?
I think Alan Williams is a better college basketball player right now than Caleb Sarzewski. But they're two different positions.
My question was simple. Maybe you misheard. Would he start at Arizona?
Yes. Right now, yes.
Come on.
Dude, you're asking a question. This was coming,
maybe,
by the way.
Maybe. Listen, I'm not even going to be dismissive. Maybe. And I hate turning this into like an Alan Williams conversation, because I do think he's a good college basketball player. I think where we come down is I tend to look at some of the players, not Steph Curry, not Damian Lillard, but like some guys who, if you put them in not just any other league, but on other rosters, they wouldn't be relevant basketball players. And yet, because they play in an inferior league, but on a team that where they're so much better than everybody else at that level, that they post numbers that, I, honest to God, I think Alex Poitras could post those kinds of numbers. You put him on the same team.
Yeah, so this is where we ran into it. You're talking right into the point I'm about to make. So I did think about this when we were building the list, because specifically Kentucky is such a headache when it comes to this. Like, we've got Poitras at 73.
Yeah.
That is way too low. I mean, eventually it's just what we did, and I almost feel like we were like, well, we just can't put 9 Kentucky players in the top 40. Well,
I can.
Actually, maybe we
to.
Should have. Like, honestly, maybe we should have done that. Like, we would have gotten hate from every 9.
But here's the difference. I don't think Alex Poitras is great. I don't think that's crazy low for Alex Poitras. I don't have a high opinion of Alex Poitras.
Yeah, I'd like him. I mean, he is, you know, coming back as a junior, and so maybe there's.
I might actually take Alan Williams over Alex Poitras.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I would too. But still.
God, I know you would.
Oh. Good. Hey, listen. And
you
want to
have admit it. You want to have Alan Williams' baby?
No, Vecini, dude.
You want to have a baby with Alan Williams?
Google Vecini, our new colleague. Google Sam Vecini, Alan Williams. The dude wrote like a 2,500-word story on the guy. Okay, so he's even bigger on Alan Williams than me. So I thank him for taking some heat off.
In the Sam Vecini interview process, you know, I was, I don't hire and fire people, but thankfully our boss is
in your mind. I think you do.
I can push it. Push it and see what happens to you. I said I don't. I didn't say I can't.
Exactly.
And so, but I'm always appreciative that our boss is like, they want my input on such things. And so I spent, 45 minutes or so on the phone with Sam, who I'd never met before, and I walked away. And I can't wait till we start having him on the podcast, because he's a really smart guy. People will realize that. That was my first impression of him. Like, he's really, really smart. But I swear we weren't talking for 5 minutes before he brought up Alan Williams.
And get out of here.
Yeah, he was like, I'm a big, like, it was almost like I was asking his interest. You know, I don't remember exactly the context, but in my head, this is the way that conversation went down. Yeah, so my favorite movie is Goodfellas, and my favorite band is the Beatles, and I love Alan Williams too. You know, that's sort of the way I remember it. It was just like I think the first basketball player I've ever heard him mention by name was Alan Williams. So you two, don't even get me started on John Brown.
Dude, he's a legitimately awesome player, dude. I don't know what you want me to say. High points, John Brown, 86 on the list. That's reasonable.
If we took John Brown and put him at, I don't know, any top 25 program, what happens?
Dude, he's good. Top 25, I think he would start for plenty of them. He is extremely good. I don't know what to tell you, man. Listen, who is the guy that's not on the list that you think should have been on the list?
I actually had these written down and I deleted.
Yeah, well, for me, it would be EC Matthews, who I'm just a guy. You called him irrelevant in the email chain. I don't even think you're ashamed of that, but the dude is like a solid player at Rhode Island. So I get what you're saying. When we get down to the 90s and we don't have EC Matthews, you just don't give a damn. But I think we might get a little bit of blowback on that. So that would be my.
What about
guys.
Quinn Cook? You telling me Quinn Cook? Not a top 100 guy?
I actually thought that last year, but now I don't.
You tell me you put Quinn Cook at High Point, he ain't balling out?
I mean, he could very well.
Quinn Cook would average 25 points a game at High Point, and you'd be, and then you know what you'd be? You'd be you'd be like trying to rank Quinn Cook in the 20s at High Point because he averages 25 points per game.
Don't put me in a box like that.
That's
that
what you'd do. You'd be like Quinn Cook at High Point. You hate Quinn Cook at Duke, but Quinn Cook at High Point, you'd have your pants around your ankles.
Dude, I've got plenty of love for the big conference players, but I think there are some guys who are good at the smaller league level that have proven just to be awesome college basketball players. So that's why we give them a little bit of love. I do want to say,
what about Nigel Hayes? Is he on our list?
Dude, is he on the list? He was one that I was.
I was pushing him.
Travion Jackson. I just don't know which one I think is better. I thought we put Nigel on the list, but he might not be on the list.
I think he's not. I pushed for him. You guys didn't want him. You
rejected that. We do have another Nigel. We have Nigel Williams-Goss at 68 from Washington. Nigel Hayes, that could have been a misfire. But him and Trey Jackson.
I tried my best to get him. You guys didn't want him.
You did put Ridley on there at the end, which I think was a good call because I think Cameron Ridley at Texas, number 98, is going to end up having a good year. Sam put Brad Waldo with St. Mary's. I would have gone Nigel Hayes over Brad Waldo.
Okay. About T'Keal Cotton?
Dude, I swear, he was in like my 105, 106 area. After we filed the list T'Keal Cotton at Wichita State, he is an awesome player. He's really fun to watch, which, by the way, I'm just going to get off on a side tangent here. This top 100 list, I do love doing it. I totally nerd out over it. But we've got six outlets now that are doing this top 100. We started it. It was our baby. Nothing on the internet is sacred. I get it. It's an easy click, easy thing. So next year, GP, I think we should change it. I don't want to say what the change is on the podcast.
No, tell me. Let's go. Let's talk it through.
No, I don't want to. I don't even know for sure what it'll be, but I don't want to say it and then have someone else do it next year. So while everyone else can do their top 100 list, we're going to do something similar yet different. Because
it better not be like 150, because I can't do those.
It's
lists.
Not going to be 150. You guys okay? Make me crazy. If anything, you know what? I'll tell you what. If anything, it might even benefit your desire to put 17 Kentucky players on the list. But
yeah, I would love to. Put
I got some brainstorming, but we see ESPN, and more power to them. I mean, SB Nation, you may want to make a top 100 list. We don't have, you know, intellectual property over that. I wasn't the first one to ever think of it, but we were the first ones to do it for college hoops. And everyone's got a list, man.
What are you going to do, right? What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I just want to mention a couple guys here, by the way. Mm-hmm. We have Devontae Smith-Rivera, Georgetown, at 54. I think he'll be higher by year's end. We were curious about what to do with Chris Walker at Florida. He's 43. He he's supposed to be awesome. We just haven't seen it yet. So we were kind of confused about where exactly we should put him. His teammate, Dorian Finney-Smith at Florida, 78. I think he's going to have a really awesome year. We did not, by the way, Bryce Johnson, we have at 61 at North Carolina. We didn't put Kennedy Meeks on the list. I wonder if that ultimately, we'll see what his game is like. So that one was another one I was curious about.
How about no Syracuse players?
And I realized that after we filed, but I don't have an issue with it.
Neither do I. No. Who would you put on?
I don't know who you could possibly put on. I don't think there's anyone that would be worthy of it. I don't know if there's any other team. So Syracuse, I'm trying to think if there's any other like major, like mainstream popular team like that that doesn't have a player. Indiana's only player is Yogi Ferrell. I don't know if there's anyone else. I mean, everyone else from our top 20, your top 25 and one, I think, just about.
Yeah, I would think. I think Syracuse would be the only like, you know, true national brand team that doesn't have a player. Like, I'm going through the coaches poll right now, okay? Kentucky's got plenty, Arizona plenty, Duke, of course, Wisconsin, yes, Kansas, yes, Carolina, yes, Florida. Mm-hmm. Virginia does. We got Brogdon, right?
Yeah, and I almost put London Perantis on, but yep, it's just Brogdon. Okay. And Toby is kind of a fringe guy too, but he hasn't gotten awesome.
Louisville, yes, Texas, obviously, Wichita yes. State has two. Villanova has at least
yes.
two.
Yes, Darren Hilliard and Javon
Pinkston. Right? Gonzaga, we got Pangos.
And we got Wesley, who everyone forgets about, the USC transfer. He's probably going to – and Vicini really pushed for him. I think that was a good call. But we have Wesley, Pangos. We did not put Wiltshire, but I'm okay with that. I think I voted for Wiltshire.
You
I think you did. It's tough. I think he – well, he might end up proving to be a top 100 player, but maybe next year is the year that breaks out. I don't know. But we do have two Gonzaga players.
Iowa State, we have –
yes. So we have Niang.
Yeah, of course.
I'm relatively speaking down on Monty Morris as a top 100 player. I just want to see him do it. And we did not put Bryce DeJean Jones, who I think will be.
Okay.
We did not. It's only Niang. There's a lot of guys. Dude, I was surprised by how many players didn't make the list. It felt like a good 20 to 25 out of case. Keep going.
Connecticut, we got Boatwright.
We have Boatwright, and did we get Brima on the list?
Yes, he's at the very
end. Yeah, 94, Brima.
VCU.
Travion Graham.
San Diego State.
Yep, we have Winston Shepherd, Winston Shepherd's way too low. He's at 62. I think he's a top 50 player, but regardless.
Michigan State, we have Brandon Dawson.
We have Brandon Dawson. Denzel Valentine is unlike any other player, but didn't crack the list.
Oh, wow. Oklahoma, Buddy.
Yeah, Oklahoma, we have Buddy Hield. He wasn't close, but I thought about Ryan Spangler as well. But
I love that there's a relevant basketball player named Buddy.
Dude, I knew you. How can you not, Buddy? And he's like legitimately really awesome. He's number 25 on our list.
If Oklahoma gets Tayshaun Thomas eligible, they could be they're gonna be good no matter what. But they could be.
Yeah,
really,
I rated
really
him high in our. We all did our top 25 and one matrices on the site. I had Oklahoma pretty high relative to everyone else. I kind of did it banking on him being eligible.
Ohio State, D'Angelo Russell. Anybody else?
No one else from Ohio State, but D'Angelo Russell in part. I mean, coaches believe that he's going
I talked to Thad Mata about him a few weeks ago. Loves him.
Apparently he is like going to just be an absolute, I mean, Ohio State was brutal. Couldn't watch him on offense. He alone apparently is going to jump him. He's 44 on our list. Might be a little bit high for some Jeff Goodman, but overall I think that's going to look like a good pick.
Nebraska. Yes.
Taron Pettaway, obviously. Siobhan Shields didn't sniff the list, but he's a really good player in that league.
SMU, we've got.
Marcus Kennedy, who's not technically eligible yet, wondering when that might happen. He's 65, and then Nick Moore, the point guard, is 84.
Michigan, Karis.
So Michigan, Karis LeVert is clearly the pick. I did debate Derek Walton, their point guard, because I think Walton actually might make LeVert an even better player this year, but he did not make the list. LeVert is number 8.
And then Syracuse is 24th in the coaches poll. No Syracuse players. And then Iowa.
Aaron White, love his game. I was actually got a lot of guys who I would probably put in like the 100 to 200 range, but only Aaron White, who I think only Kaminsky is, and coincidentally they're both white. But in terms of just being a problem at the forward position, White's like freaky athletic, so he is on our list at 59.
So Syracuse is the only team ranked in the top 25 of the preseason coaches poll that does not have a player on our top 100 list. And they got to go meet with the committee on infractions. Just bad week. Bad week for Syracuse all the way around.
It is a bad week. Before we wrap up the podcast, though, I wanted to actually just do a quick reset, just a quick drive-by. Our top 100 players last year, GP, we actually did a pretty good job. I brought up the Google machine. It's not bringing up the page in time, though, so it's delaying maybe my internet. Oh, wait. Hold on. Here it goes. Okay, so just real quick here. I thought we kind of totally nailed this. You know, we lost Goodman. Suddenly things get a lot clearer. Here it is. Okay, you ready for this?
Sure.
Like, if the order might not be terrific, but I'll just reel off the top 25. So Wiggins 1, Smart, Marcus Smart 2, Doug McDermott 3. By the way, all these players have left the sport either because they were awesome or graduated. Doug McDermott 3, who, you know, would have been 1, sure. I guess, ideally. Russ Smith, Julius Randle. And by the way, I didn't see it.
It was terrible.
I turned off the TV. It must have been 5 minutes before it happened last night. He broke his leg in the Laker game.
Exactly.
I watched to see if the Kobe Dwight thing led to punches. It didn't. I was like, all right, I'm going to bed.
Right.
Jabari was 6. Gary Harris was 7. Aaron Kraft was 8. Jahi Carson, we overrated him, 9. Aaron Gordon at 10. Mitch McGarry, 11. Who, by the way, if Mitch McGarry had been able to come back, he would have been, I would think, a top 5 player on our list. Andrew Harrison, Willie Cauley-Stein, Rodney Hood, Adrian Payne. You'll notice. And then Montrezl Harrell. I think Montrezl Harrell was the highest ranked player last year on our list who is back. He was 16. CJ Fair, gone. Glenn Robinson III, 18, gone. Samaj Christian, gone. Shabazz Napier at 20, gone. Spencer Dinwiddie, 21, gone. Clay Anthony Early, gone. Joe Harris, gone. Isaiah Austin, gone. And 25 was Poitras.
Two of the top 25 are actually back in school.
Yep. And then it's just LaQuinton Ross gone, Kyle Anderson gone, Joel Embiid gone, Decker is back. If you want to go to 30, Decker was 29, James Michael McAdoo was 30. So 3 of the 30 are back, which I kind of indicates I think we did a pretty good job overall just taking a look. And it's tough, too. When we try and rate these freshmen, GP, I mean, we're going off of what we've seen in person in Vegas and Georgia in like the year, 2 years prior. Reputation a lot and expecting what they're going to do minutes wise. So freshmen are obviously really tough, but
for me, I have it all right every time. Okay. It might be tough for you. You speak for yourself.
All right, my
real,
all right.
Real quick, I got to hit some news and notes presented by Squarespace. Gib Arnold fired. He's the Hawaii coach. Should you be surprised if you're Hawaii when you have to fire your coach amid an NCAA investigation after you hired your coach straight off of Tim Floyd's staff at USC?
Not even remotely shocked. That was a weird one. You posted on it late Tuesday night. I don't have the desire or time to research this, but it is my guess that Gib Arnold is the first Division I college basketball coach in the past 40 years to be fired between October 25th and Halloween. You don't see a late October firing ever. So not only that, but him and an assistant, that program's already extremely hampered as is, given its location and trying to schedule opponents and all that. It's, you can make the argument Hawaii even shouldn't even be a D1 school, but regardless, shouldn't be surprised whatsoever. I did pick up on that, by the way, on your headline. The Tim Floyd thing was the last line of your story there, just like, and oh, by the way.
It was just like a wild that when they made the hire, like, I got nothing against Gib, but like, he was a part of a staff that was caught up in some pretty wild stuff, whether the NCAA could prove it or not. And so, listen, it doesn't mean he should never get a job again, but I was surprised that he got a head coaching job. Like, that's not usually the way that stuff works, but whatever. Good, you know, Hawaii will move on, I imagine. Keith Thomas, earlier today, ruled it academically ineligible at St. John's. This is in your neck of the woods. How big of a deal is that?
I think, first of all, you're setting me up beautifully with these questions, GP.
That's what I do.
I don't know. Listen, I'll be honest. I don't know how good or not good Keith Thomas would ultimately be for St. John's. But this community college that he was involved in apparently was it's some shady stuff overall. The hammer comes down. Johnny's overall big picture should be a fringe NCAA tournament team. Them not getting him eligible, I don't know if it'll impact him too much, but this was one Adam Zagoria was all over.
And last, Larry Brown was quoted at American Athletic Conference Media Day earlier today, said John Calipari is going to have to cut his rotation at some point. That's John's, one of John's mentors. I don't know that those two are as close as they used to be, but they have been very, very close in the past. And yet here's Larry Brown, Hall of Fame coach, saying, listen, John can keep talking about this platoon thing, but at some point he's going to have to move off of that. I guess it's neat when a Hall of Fame coach and competitor sort of says that, but I think that's what we've all assumed, right? No matter what John Calipari is saying now, he's going to have to move off the platoon at some point.
Okay, a few things. One, yes, we've said this, we agree, we'll believe the platoon thing is truly a strategy when we see it, even by Christmas. We don't think that that's going to stick. Two, you might have been traveling, but you're bearing the lead here, man. I tweeted about this, so I wasn't there, but what I thought you were going to mention with Larry Brown is, like, I'm following Twitter this morning and just the day is getting started, and I'm seeing beat reporters whomever pass along these Larry Brown quotes. And his first one is basically he wants to get rid of the 3-point shot. And it's to me, it's like so Larry Brown. Like, it's 2014, you're coaching SMU and you want to abolish the 3-point shot. And then, like, 3 minutes later, someone else tweets that they're like, so, you know, you missed the tournament last year. Everyone thought you'd be in it. He just goes, yeah, I don't know what they want. Like, Larry, like, that's kind of like your job, is you got to know how to schedule, what to do. He's just, the 3-point shot shouldn't exist. And, I don't know how to get into the NCAA tournament. So it's like, good time. So while SMU is certainly thriving and relevant under Larry Brown, and he's proven a lot of naysayers wrong, those kind of sentiments were why a lot of people were like, what is SMU doing when it's hiring Larry Brown a couple of years ago? So they should still be good this year. But it was worth it for a laugh. Larry Brown, by the way, will remind listeners on this week's podcast, your shopping partner in the greater Memphis area.
Yeah, Larry and I have a mutual friend. And then I also hosted like a Coaching for Literacy, I don't know if it's a let's just call it a discussion for charity. I guess it was last month. And he was terrific. It was basically just me setting him up. And it was just a conversation in about an hour long conversation. He was really, really great. But I will say this: I was one of the ones who didn't think SMU was smart to go this Larry Brown direction. I thought it seemed desperate and silly. And regardless of where it goes from here, and regardless, like, you sort of have to acknowledge, like, it's been worthwhile, right? I mean, it's
without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean,
SMU, even if for some reason, like, SMU doesn't get to the tournament again this year, like, even if they don't, like, he's still, with the players they've gotten in the conference transitional change. I mean, they were one shy of winning the preseason team, first team in the AAC to UConn. So without a doubt, this has been the right call.
All right. Remember, today's Eye on College Basketball podcast was brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is constantly improving its platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, meaning your content will look great on every device every single time. So go ahead and launch a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. Again, when you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and to show your support for the Eye on College Basketball podcast at Squarespace. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We've kept you long enough, I'm certain. I still have to write a column from here in Charlotte. And then, of course, get ready for Game 7 of the World Series as we're recording.
Who's your pick?
I want the Royals to win, so I'll pick them.
So do I. Yeah. I'd love to see the Royals. And I, by the way, we obviously never talk about baseball on the podcast. The only time I get into it now is literally maybe the ALCS, NLCS, but I love the World Series. Game 7, that's just an awesome thing. So
yeah. By the time most people listen to this, I imagine
it'll have been over.
It'll
but
be
still.
Over. But at this moment, we don't know. But we are. I think the official position of the Iron College Basketball Podcast is we are rooting for the Kansas City Royals.
Yes.
Nothing against San Francisco, which is rooting against the Kansas
City. And by the way, the end of the baseball season really, you know, baseball season's duration and college basketball, they kind of flip each other. So as baseball season ends, college hoop season begins and vice versa.
How beautiful.
How about that? You know, yeah, that's symmetry right there, my friend.
Remember to subscribe on the Iron College Basketball Podcast over at iTunes. It's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest edition. And either way, we'll be back next week. Take care.